1 week of every year is designated National Brotherhood Week. This is just one of many such weeks honoring various worthy causes. One of my favorites is National Make Fun of the Handicapped Week, which Frank Fontaine and Jerry Lewis are in charge of, as you know. During National Brotherhood Week, various special events are arranged to drive home the message of brotherhood. This year, for example, on the first day of the week, Malcolm X was killed, which gives you an idea of how effective the whole thing is. I'm sure we all agree that we ought to love one another, and I know there are people in the world who do not love their fellow human beings, and I hate people like that. Here's a song about National Brotherhood Week. Oh, the white folks hate the black folks, and the black folks hate the white folks. To hate all but the right folks is an old established rule. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, Lena Horne and Sheriff Clark are dancing cheek to cheek. It's fun to eulogize the people you despise, as long as you don't let them in your school. The poor folks hate the rich folks, and the rich folks hate the poor folks. All of my folks hate all of your folks. It's American as apple pie. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, New Yorkers love the Puerto Ricans 'cause it's very chic. Step up and shake the hand of someone you can't stand. You can tolerate him if you try. Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates the Jews. But during National Brotherhood Week, National Brotherhood Week, it's National Everyone Smile at One Anotherhood Week. Be nice to people who are inferior to you. It's only for a week, so have no fear. Be grateful that it doesn't last all year.
Welcome to the Innerside Radio National Brotherhood Week edition with your host that contains the soul of Scooter. We're continuing with the New Atheist for Dummies series this week, and I think I should take some time out to explain why I'm doing this series at this point and explain that I'm not switching the program to like an Atheist Hour format. It's a series perhaps whose time has come, and there's other reasons. I'm stepping away from the political satire temporarily because of where we are in the election cycle. This is when the battles are over and the war begins. And I believe it's Howard Zinn who said, "Truth is the first casualty of war." Like it or not, these candidates are saying everything to everybody as close to what the candidate thinks the centrist masses and interest groups want to hear, and keeping their fingers crossed that the contradictions and subsequent accusations of hypocrisy don't get too much airtime. They feel they have a job to do, and that job is to get elected now, make policy later, confident in the staunch American tradition of the short attention span. Now, believe it or not, parody and satire become difficult when you can't really pin anything down. You need to get your teeth into something good and solid and real, and then exaggerate the hell out of it and hopefully come up with something clever, and hilarity ensues. When everything is already bullshit, there's nowhere to start. And I've been wanting to do this series for about a year now, so it's a good fit. It's a good time. And there's plenty of time to stretch out. I should point out, in the interest of the illusion of objectivity in phony American journalism, that I am a functional atheist, so I might be biased on covering the movement. But it is indeed a movement, as was made clear to me when I began to listen to their events and conventions and speakers arguing over what to call the movement. Are we going to be the brights or the non-believers, or the atheists, or the National Atheist Front, or the Front for National Atheists. This, by the way, proves there are enough people involved to define an actual movement. And I think it's pretty obvious where this all comes from and why now. So let's drop back a few decades when the Falwells and Robertson, the moral majority, which was neither, got their purchase on the Republicans in the 80s. But if you know the nuances of that infiltration in Republican politics, their function was to pour in the money they extorted from the flock, bring in the votes, and in return get totally burned with a bunch of rhetoric but no action on abortion, and be content with losing less ground on school prayer and sex ed than they would with the godless liberal satanic Democrats. At the time, the moral majority was rhetorically frightening, but no pragmatist, left, right, or center got too alarmed. They were being played like suckers by the Republicans, whose entire source of power is playing the suckers. And you have to give them credit where due. Blatant union busters mustering working-class white boys for their swing vote is the sort of manipulation that Machiavelli could only fantasize. Now, fast forward past the Bill Clinton malaise to recent times and consider the current debate over evolution. Creationists insist that humans did not evolve from chimpanzees. And to prove it, they simply shaved a chimpanzee, ran it for president, and it won, which proves there is no such thing as evolution. George W. Bush did more to advance atheism in America than Bertrand Russell, Ayn Rand, Richard Dawkins, Mark Twain, Clarence Darrow, and George Carlin combined. Yes, my fellow Americans and neighboring planeteers, the new atheist movement is a backlash, and it's coming your way. I've been functioning as an atheist since I was a kid, because I recognized the con from the Santa Claus Rouge that I just got burned on for 6 years, and that religion was another third-rate attempt at mind control, or as I perceived it at the time, behavior control, with startling Santa Claus-like similarities. And I'd like to give a bit of advice to my Christian brothers and sisters. If you expect to keep your game going, I'd suggest you stop underestimating the intelligence of children. People living in Wales, all the animals in one boat, and especially the Tower of Babel. That's the one that turned me, because as a budding bullshit artist, I was insulted by that explanation of the diversity of languages. I could make up a better story than that on the crapper, and I was only 8 years old. I never thought twice about being an atheist raised in a Christian environment. Didn't care enough even to mention it. I was raised in an era when it was impolite to talk about politics or religion, and children were to be seen, not heard. Later on, I experimented with various powerful psychedelics. Everybody was seeing God but me. I did grow somewhat fond of Jimi Hendrix and Jerry Garcia. And as with all atheists, I became fascinated with religions. Read the Bibles, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, that's a tough one. A bootleg English version of the Koran, did a term paper on Buddhism, and I did, however, retain a sort of ethnocentric respect for Christianity and the message of peace and charity and selflessness, which characterizes that message. What post-60s teenager wouldn't? I also had many Christian mentors, and an ex-Jesuit taught me existentialism and the dangers of dogma. It was G.W. Bush who broke that spell, because when he went all the way off the deep end of neoconservatism with that maniac John Ashcroft at his side and started bombing the crap out of civilians, initiating a modern crusade, I actually thought the Christian masses would rise up against this lunatic whose heart had been allegedly saved by Jesus, but apparently his brain was not. And that's how the B-52s got airborne. Burned again. There were a heck of a lot of Christians who were upset by this, but not enough to get organized and do anything about it. This guy should have been run out of the White House by pissed off Christians for crapping all over their religion. And what did we get? Code Pink. I think there's a lot of atheists who got the same rude awakening as myself, and I have to admit, we were a bit naive. But that too shall pass. I apologize for constantly playing this piece, but for me, it still says it all.
I remember my son when he heard the B-52 over his head. I put my hand on his heart, and I felt his heart bumping like crazy.
Let's get back to the theme of our program tonight, National Brotherhood Week. And I have to pick up where we left off on last week's program. In summary, some kid in Florida stole a cracker from a Catholic church, which refers to said inanimate object as a Eucharist, which is a cracker blessed by a priest until it is Jesus. And you can't take the cracker out of the box, which is the church, so great gnashing of teeth followed by a media campaign led by a right-wing loon from a Christo-fascist organization called the Catholic League. Spokesman Bill Donahue, a frequent asshat, called on by Fox News whenever Muslims, gays, liberals are to be bashed, and once a year when the First Amendment Grinch steals Christmas meme is to be resurrected. The allegedly sober, red-nosed Donahue called for a religious fatwa on the kid from Florida, calling for his expulsion from a state-funded university, and the frothing right-wing hordes of the Catholic masses began an immediate campaign of death threats against the kid and his family. P.Z. Myers, a professor of biology at Minnesota University and well-known blogger, atheist, and liberal, responded to this abomination on his blog, ridiculing the stupidity of cracker-worshipping idolatry by superstitious idiots and obvious pandering hate-mongers like the Christo-fascists at the Catholic League, and called for people to send him crackers for closer analysis of transubstantiational claims. The Catholic League responded with another press release, and with the help of the astoundingly Catholic Fox News Network, redirected their fatwa to P.Z. Myers in an attempt to repeat their success in ousting another uppity college professor, Ward Churchill. Last Thursday, we interviewed P.Z. Myers on this program, which sparked yet another press release from Donahue's Catholic League. Quote, Myers went on Houston radio station KPFT last night, saying that Bill Donahue has declared a fatwa against him. He should know better. I don't need others to be fighting for me. I'm quite good at it myself. But he'd better be careful what he says, because if I get any death threats, it won't be hard to connect the dots. Unquote. Now, Scooter is having a religious experience, knowing that a staff of right-wing freaks had to sit through half an hour of Innerside blasphemous rants. Not to be intimidated nor frightened by some overweight, geriatric, puffy-faced, God-sucking pink boy like Bill Donahue, a spat of YouTube videos appeared the next day, including the YouTube Eucharist Challenge, the work of a fringe atheist, anarchist, ne'er-do-wells, probably financed by Al-Qaeda. Suddenly, the internets explode with outrage. Flame wars erupt, burning trolls, sock puppets, and concerned citizens alike. The scuttling from beneath the refrigerators is heard throughout God's gray earth as New Agers clutch at their crystals in fear. The smoke swingers are in revolt, and the Islamic threat is rolling on the floor, laughing their asses off. Suddenly, covering the new atheist movement is now like sitting in the stands at an old Philadelphia Flyers hockey game. You go to cover the game, a fight breaks out, the stands empty, and the story is all about blood and ice. But the old Philadelphia Flyers were not representative of the finer points of hockey. They went out there to beat the crap out of their opponents until no one of any talent was left unbleeding. Not unlike John Madden's Oakland Raiders or Karl Rove's political strategy. The Christo-Fascist Catholic League is hardly representative of Catholic Americans. They are the fringe, bellicose, Bush bootlickers. Here's more from this Mussolini Roman Ratzinger rat. Donahue refers to P.C. Myers as a Planet of the Apes biologist. Apparently, Donahue is a closet Christard of the evangelical Protestant variety, popular in the one-room schoolrooms of Louisiana, and hasn't gotten the memo that Catholic schools teach evolution, not creationism. But anything to incite the rednecks between beers is enough to keep the money rolling into the Catholic League, even if it's heresy. Donahue appeals to the level of Catholics who think heresy comes in an aerosol can to keep the bouffants intact while riding in the back of a pickup truck. Now, the atheist pointing to the Catholic and saying, "Oh my God, these idiots are bitching over a cracker, like Muslims in a cartoon." And the Catholics are saying, "The cracker is sacred. It actually is Jesus." And the atheists are saying, "That was my point." And some Catholics are saying, "We'll pray for you." And the science guys are going, "You don't really believe that thing is flesh." And the Catholics are all like, "You are bigots and haters, and you don't respect our beliefs." And the science guys are, "Duh." And the atheists are like, "I told you." And the freaks from the Catholic leagues are, "Jesus, Akbar, jihad, jihad, jihad." And did you ever notice how when pronounced at the top of your lungs, jihad, jihad, and yeehaw, yeehaw, are pretty much the same. And the Catholics say, "Let us have our beliefs. We are protected under the First Amendment." And the atheists are all like, "Yeah, but it's the death threats and the crushing of freedom of speech that is the point." And the Ku Klux are saying, "Kidnapping Jesus is a hate crime." And the lawyers are shuffling through their files for precedents of sentient crackers across state lines. And now Senator Tom Foley, a Virginia politician ironically no relation to Mark Foley, is calling for increased security at the Republican National Convention in the light of the fact that P.C. Myers, a mild-mannered biology professor with a somewhat obscure science blog, has unleashed forces that might not be contained with his threats to the Eucharist. And the atheists are saying, "It's just a goddamn cracker." And the Republicans are going, "Who the hell is P.C. Myers?" And it keeps getting weirder and weirder. You can't make this stuff up. And now, Sam Harris.
So I've spoken about the problems in arguing that religion is true and in arguing that religion is useful. The last way of defending God is to argue that atheism is dogmatic, intolerant, or otherwise worthy of reproach. You know, we don't have websites for non-astrologers. There are no groups for non-astrologers. Nobody wakes up in the morning feeling the need to remind himself that he's not an astrologer. I mean, the irony is that atheism is completely without content. It is not a philosophical position. And all religious people are atheists with respect to everyone else's religion. I mean, we're all atheists with respect to the thousands of dead gods who lie in that mass grave we call mythology. I mean, think of Thor and Isis and Zeus. You know, these were once gods in good standing among our ancestors. Everyone now rejects them. Well, actually, not everyone. I occasionally get hate mail from people who do believe in Zeus, but that's another story. More importantly, every Christian rejects the claims of Islam, just as I do. You know, Muslims claim that they have the perfect word of the creator of the universe. Why do they believe this? Because it says so in the book. Sorry, not good enough. So this term atheism really is misleading. We're talking about specific truth claims and their evidence, or lack thereof. Now, what about the charge that atheism is dogmatic? Let's get this straight. Jews, Christians, and Muslims claim that their holy books are so profound, so prescient of humanity's needs, that they could have only been written by an omniscient being. An atheist is simply a person who has entertained this claim, read the books, and found the claim to be ridiculous. This is not dogmatism. There's nothing that an atheist needs to believe on insufficient evidence in order to reject the biblical God. What dogma have we all embraced to not take Apollo and Zeus into account as we go about our day? What would it be dogmatic to doubt that the Iliad or the Odyssey was dictated by the creator of the universe? The atheist is simply saying, as Carl Sagan did, that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. If ever there were an antidote to dogmatism, this is it. There's a related claim that atheists and scientists generally are arrogant. Now, this is rather ironic. The truth is that when scientists don't know something, like why the universe came into being or how the first self-replicating molecules formed on Earth, they tend to admit it. Pretending to know things you do not know is a profound liability in science. You get punished for this rather quickly. But pretending to know things you do not know is the lifeblood of faith-based religion. This is really one of the profound ironies of religious discourse, in the frequency with which you can hear religious people praise themselves for their humility while tacitly claiming to know things about cosmology and physics and chemistry and paleontology that no scientist knows. Any person who dignifies Genesis as an account of creation, or as informative, is essentially saying to someone like Stephen Hawking, "Stephen, you're a smart guy, and I see you got a lot of equations over there, but you don't know enough about cosmology. You know, it says here that God did this in 6 days and then rested on the seventh, and I don't see how you've really grappled with the nuances of the biblical account." This would be amusing if it were not having such a disastrous effect upon our public policy. It is impeding medical research and the teaching of science in this country. 30% of biology teachers in the United States at the high school level don't even mention evolution because of the hassle occasioned by the religious hysteria that it provokes in their students and their students' parents. You all remember the recent presidential debate where three Republican candidates for the presidency solemnly raised their hands to testify that they don't believe in evolution. And there was no follow-up question. I mean, this is embarrassing. And it seems like every few months the opinion page of the New York Times publishes another defense of this kind of ignorance. There's no question that this is eroding our stature in the eyes of the rest of the developed world. It's not arrogant or dogmatic to point this out. It seems to me that our intellectual honesty lives or dies in this trench. Now, it's also commonly imagined that atheists think there is nothing beyond human life and human understanding. The truth is that atheists are free to admit that there's much about the universe we don't understand. I mean, it is obvious we don't understand the universe. But it is even more obvious that neither the Bible nor the Quran reflects our best understanding of it. There could be life on other planets, complex life, technically accomplished civilizations. I mean, just imagine a civilization a million years old as opposed to a few thousand. Atheists are free to imagine this possibility. They're also free to admit that if such brilliant extraterrestrials exist, the Bible and the Quran are going to be even less impressive to them than they are to human atheists. It's often imagined that atheists are in principle closed to spiritual experience. But the truth is that there's nothing that prevents an atheist from experiencing self-transcending love or ecstasy or rapture or awe. In fact, there's nothing that prevents an atheist from going into a cave for a year or a decade and practicing meditation like a proper mystic. What atheists don't tend to do is make unjustified and unjustifiable claims about the cosmos on the basis of those experiences. Now, there's no question that disciplines like meditation and prayer can have a profound effect upon the human mind. But do the positive experiences of, say, Christian mystics over the ages suggest that Jesus is the sole savior of humanity? Not even remotely, because Christians have been having these experiences, but so have Buddhists and Muslims and even atheists. So there's a deeper reality here, and it makes a mockery of religious denominations. The fact is that whenever human beings make an honest effort to get at the truth, they reliably transcend the accidents of their birth and upbringing. I mean, just as it would be absurd to speak about Christian physics, though the Christians invented physics, and it would be absurd to speak about Muslim algebra, though the Muslims invented algebra, it will one day be absurd to speak about Christian or Muslim ethics or spirituality. And whatever is true about our circumstance in ethical and spiritual, terms, is discoverable now, and can be articulated without offending all that we've come to understand about the nature of the universe. And certainly without making divisive claims about the unique sanctity of any book or pegging these most beautiful features of our lives to rumors of ancient miracles. Finally, there's this notion that atheism is responsible for the greatest crimes in the 20th century. Now, this is actually, it's quite amazing to me. This is the most frequent objection I come across, so I think I should deal with it briefly. It is amazing how many people think that the crimes of Hitler and Pol Pot and Mao were the result of atheism. The truth is, this is a total misconstrual of what went on in those societies and of the psychological and social forces that allow people to follow their dear leader over the brink. I mean, the problem with fascism and communism was not that they were too critical of religion. The problem is they're too much like religions. I mean, these are utterly dogmatic systems of thought. I mean, I recently had a debate with Rick Warren in the pages of Newsweek, and he suggested that North Korea was a model atheist society and that any atheist with the courage of his convictions should want to move there. The truth is, North Korea is organized exactly like a faith-based cult centered on the worship of Kim Jong-il. The North Koreans apparently believe that the shipments of food aid that they receive from us to keep them from starving to death are actually devotional offerings to Kim Jong-il. Is too little faith really the problem with North Korea? Is too much skeptical inquiry what is wrong here? Yes, Auschwitz, the Gulag, and the killing fields are not the product of atheism. They're the product of other dogmas run amok: nationalism, political dogma. Hitler did not engineer a genocide in Europe because of atheism. In fact, Hitler doesn't even appear to have been an atheist. He regularly invoked Jesus in his speeches. But that's beside the point. He did it on the basis of other beliefs, dogmas about Jews and the purity of German blood. The history of Muslim jihad, however, does have something to do with Islam. The atrocities of September 11th did have something to do with what 19 men believed about martyrdom and paradise. The fact that we're not funding stem cell research at the federal level does have something to do with what Christians believe about conception and the human soul.
And you've been listening to the always encouraging and ever uplifting Sam Harris on the Inner Side Radio program, New Atheist for Dummies series. See y'all next week.